2-hour episode.
Woo! Seriously.
I'm going to be honest with you. I between this episode and last episode, I realized two things. I talk too much, and I use my hands when I talk because I have closed my exercise ring both times now during the work.
My body
thinks I'm working out, which is just fantastic.
That's amazing.
Yes.
You know what that's called? That's called energy.
Take that, Roadhouse.
We have energy.
Take that
Succession podcast. Take that Avatar podcast. Take that Netflix podcast.
We Last of Us podcast. Yeah.
Have energy.
So that could be our promo for the Webby nomination or the Webby voting.
Here's my promo. You can choose to keep it. For all those of you listening who still haven't voted for us, let's go. This is the last day.
Great.
I swore you were going to be like, for all of you who haven't voted yet, fuck you.
That's exactly what I thought.
I was like, please don't be mean.
Because
give them what they expect and then deliver something
that's
they
true.
Wouldn't think
yeah,
of.
Everyone, there you
yeah,
go.
There it is. You did it. You did it.
Okay, that's perfect.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to One More Hollywood Podcast. I'm Chris Moore.
Hello, I'm Dennis DeNobly.
And I'm Katie Marpy. Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, we talked to Kevin Smith about how he owns a theater in New Jersey. And right now, CinemaCon is happening, which is a conference for theater owners. So we've had movie theaters on our mind lately. There's once again a lot in the news about the ups and downs of the theatrical market, the hits and misses, the new genres that are working for people. So today we're asking ourselves and the listeners, are there ways to predict what audiences want to see in theaters? And I think right away, I'm just throwing this question to Dennis, because based on what you have told us, it sounds like you might be the expert of the 2024 theatrical market, Dennis. Is this true?
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm the expert, but I think I've injured my back trying to carry the entire industry, having seen 12 movies so far this year in theaters.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as of this recording, 12. I have another one later this week and whatever. But anyway, so 12 started on New Year's Day with Anyone But You and then just moved on from
woo!
There. Just kept, yeah,
sorry.
Woo.
So Dennis, as our incredibly crack researcher and the super high level of data that we provide on One More Hollywood Podcast.
Oh, absolutely,
In your experience, are you alone in the theater? Is there other people in the theater? Or are there other people in the theater?
So it depends on the film, I've learned, right? Basically, anytime, if I saw it like at the early onset, like the Monkey Man screening I went to was packed. Same with Godzilla Kong. Some other ones were a bit limited. I think it was me and two ushers when I saw Madam Web. But but the other thing I will say is that it depends, right? If I saw it normally, that's great. But if I saw it like Godzilla Kong, Dune Part 2, when you see those movies in IMAX, packed house. And even right now, I was trying to see Dune Part 2 again in IMAX 70mm, which they have over at Universal City Walk. Every night, still sold out. Unless you want to do the first two rows, which I don't know if you've ever seen a picture from an IMAX of the first two rows, but it's just this warped face.
Yeah.
Just tragic. So I find that anything that's like Dolby Cinema or specifically around an event or like a way you could stream it or watch it completely different than you could watch it at home has been packed. Every time I've gone where it wasn't that, it was just a sort of a basic screening, a lot of empty seats. The other thing I will say is a few of these on the list are what AMC, or at least for me, AMC, I know some other theaters are in it, but Screen Unseen or Scream Unseen, where basically you buy a ticket, I think it's $5, you buy a ticket, It's included in my A list, so I just sort of add it as one of my reservations. But you essentially go to the screening. They know, you know what rating it is. You know, kind of an idea of how long it is. They're off a little bit time wise, I think, for that reason. So you can't really find it out. There's a lot of communities on Reddit and everybody trying to figure out what the movie is ahead of time. And you sit down and the movie starts and you don't know what it is until the credits. You know, and I've seen some unique movies. I saw Lisa Frankenstein, Sting, which is that giant space spider, which, you know, younger me would have liked more than the older me. but, you know, and things like that, Next Goal Wins, stuff like that. So I've seen some really fun movies in that regard.
That's cool.
And those were packed. Yeah.
Do you feel like you're seeing more movies because you have AMC A-list? Like, has that been a big change?
Yeah, I figured, and I don't know if it's like the Sicilian side of me, but whenever I'm paying for something and I don't use it, I feel like mm-hmm. somebody's robbing me. I don't know what it is. So if you realize, like, obviously January, February, March, and, you know, I've only paid for 4 months so far, right? So that's $100. It's $25, right? So it's $100. Since I've seen, like, I think 12 movies now, you know, I've clearly gotten to the point where, like, you know, and kind reminder, at least where I live, it's $25 a ticket for the IMAX.
I was just going to say, like, so it's like $19 for non-IMAX.
Right. So, like, again, AMC, similar to last summer, AMC has essentially paid me to go there. Of course, they're expecting me to, like, buy candy and stuff like that to get their money back. Because, like, Kevin Smith basically said that he doesn't make a lot of money on first run. He's more in the candy business. So I feel like maybe that's where they're trying to get their money back.
I know. I bring this up because I'm wondering, in all of the discussion about the theaters right now and, like, will the theaters survive? Like, do you feel like being an AMC A-list member, do you feel like some kind of model like that is helpful? Or, like, is it kind of shooting themselves in the
foot? It's certainly helpful for me because I'm right. saving money, but I'm doing this. I mean, I don't know what average person would, you know, see two movies each month, one of them being IMAX. You essentially are, you know, saving money. So that would make sense. I mean, it's certainly an interesting thing. I do think that, honestly, and, you know, there are some perks that come with it. Like, when you have A-list, you get, like, a free upgrade of popcorn. Like, there's certain things that, like, make it a little more than just simply being, you feel like you're more part of a club. But I certainly think that, you know, other theater chains can do something that's a little more unique, perhaps, where, you know, you do feel like it's more of an exclusive club where you get some swag or something different, like, to make it feel more like that. If anything, now I have to show my ID when I show my ticket, which is kind of annoying, but, like, I'm, like, taking advantage of the system if I don't show my driver's license. There is that woman at AMC who calls me Fancy Dennis because I have the subscription and I don't think many people do.
That's amazing.
You know what I mean? Yeah. She's like, oh, it's Fancy
Can
Dennis.
Can we start calling you Fancy Dennis? In the theater episodes, they're going to call you Fancy Dennis.
Old Fancy Dennis DeNoble over here. That's what I want to be known as whenever Great. I go to the theater, you know.
Perfect.
But Katie, you go to theater a lot too.
I know. Well, it's
funny. What makes you go?
It's funny that this is where we are now, because I just, when I asked you that, Dennis, and you said you saw 12 in the theater or whatever it was, I counted on my Letterboxd and I've only seen 4 in the theater this year.
Oh.
And I mean, when we did our, like, streaming versus theaters episode, I was the one who was like, theaters all the way. I go to the theater all the time. But I did go a lot at the end of last year, but I just have not been as motivated this year for some reason.
What motivates you?
Yeah, yeah. What's changed, you think? Is it the movies that are coming out that you're just not really interested in?
I think it's the movies that are coming out, and maybe I'm just being, like, biased to, like, the way the theatrical, like, releases, like, the seasons work, you know?
Right. You like the award season better than this season.
So I thought about signing up for AMC A-list at the end of last year because Dennis had it. And I was like, I want to be part of the club. I want to be A-list. So, but then I was like, wait, I know not a lot of, like, great movies come out in January, February, March. That's like at least the stereotype.
Ghostbusters. No, that wasn't very good. I get it.
But, and then, so I didn't. And then I just kind of like didn't go to the theater. However, I feel like I would have liked to see a lot of the movies that have come out. Like, for example, I really want to see Monkey Man. And
yes, fantastic.
This
I would recommend Immaculate first, then First Omen back to back doubleheader. Go for it.
Yeah. See. Okay. So
that's totally sane. That's totally sane.
I like Anyone But You was an amazing experience in the theater, and I went with my friend Caitlin. Shout out to Caitlin. And we were like, yes, rom-coms, this is going to be fun. And it was cute and funny. And we left and we were like, I'm happy. And this was great. That was a great experience.
Well, so that,
it was fun.
That, I think that's an
interesting
question.
First Omen's not a rom-com.
Well, I was going to say really quick, I don't think I would feel that way after seeing the First Omen. I think I would need to go with like a big group or something, and we're all like, we're going to see a scary movie. It's going to be an event. But otherwise, like Caitlin and I are not going to just go see.
I think I want to find one horror movie. I got to find more of a middle ground. A lot of the stuff I've been seeing is coming out like Cuckoo and stuff. It's just horrifying. And I can't imagine asking you to come to the theater to watch right. it
and
like
I think,
together.
I don't know if this is correct, but I feel like there's been a lot of horror movies in the theater this year so far.
Yeah,
you know, like I just feel like everything that is an option right now is either like a horror movie or like Madame Web.
Kids movie.
No offense. I was about to say Madame Web
Panda or something.
Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, or a kids movie, which I like those two.
Madame Web was a horror film,
but it was horrible
if you paid for it.
But for me, I think that what's interesting about listening to you talk about, because part of why I was, when this topic came up as something we'd talk about, I was like, I have not been that many times, and I used to go literally once a week. I sometimes go have lunch in those theaters that have, you know, get a little food and watch a movie kind of thing.
Was that for enjoyment, or was it to feel like you're still like involved in the business?
Well, I'm in the business, so I like watching other people's stuff, but I also like theaters. And what I was going to say was, the two that I've seen, which makes me incredibly not original or unique in any way, were because of my sons. And I went with one son and saw Dune 2 in Burlington, Vermont. And I went with my other son, but we talked my wife into coming too, and we saw Godzilla and Kong. And I had a great time. And I guess all the other thing here is that in a dark room with people who are focused, who are supposed to be turning their phone off, with some popcorn and a nice chair, which are the theaters here that I go to, is actually its own experience. Like, and I think people have forgotten that. I think people have forgotten that yes, you can put all the other things, the gimmicks, the way you buy the tickets, the gourmet things, the bars, the coffee machines, the, you know, whatever. But at the end of the day, there is still something fun and unique, like probably your romantic comedy experience, Katie, where if you get just enough other people in the audience and they're into it and you're into it and you're really I get it. Everybody says, oh, kids won't focus and whatever. But Ike, my son, he focused the whole time, Kong and Godzilla, which I liked a lot. But the point is that there's also just the experience of going that I feel like the pandemic and all these business models and streaming and home, they're working so hard because no one's willing to just say, hey, remember how much fun it was going to the movies? Right?
Like,
And I think that that's the other thing for me is how do you remind people? Now, part of it, I think, is what you said, which is they went to $19 a ticket, which is crazy in my opinion. And also they didn't tell you what you get for that. Like, I just, when we bought the tickets for Kong and I was like, it's $19 for each of us. Like, are we getting 3D? Are we getting IMAX?
Like, you get the opportunity to order a cheeseburger and have it delivered to your seat.
And they were like, no, that's just our cost now because, you know, less people are coming to the movies. As if that's my problem, is to figure out how to get more people to come to the movie. But I had a great time.
Surge pricing.
I would. No, now that college basketball is over, which shout out to March Madness, both men and women's, it was a lot of fun this year.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying is like, did any part of you just remember, it's kind of fun to just see a movie? Like, it doesn't have to be a special event or whatever. It can just be, let's go see a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is, All right, going back to Caitlin. Caitlin and I see a lot of movies together, and she was my friend from UCLA, the PhD program, so we like movies. But we always try and choose something that is, like, probably going to make us feel good, you know? So, like, that's just kind of how, what we're drawn to. And even, like, regardless of if it has, like, good or bad reviews, you know? But something that is just going to be, like, a fun thing for us to do on a Friday night. So it's just, like, a fun thing that we do. And to your point, it's, like, that's what's fun is hanging out with my friend and going out to the movies and laughing a little bit, you know? Yeah. So I think I would have seen a lot more movies this year so far if there were more romantic comedies or comedies, right, or, like, regardless of, you know, it's not like I'm only seeing the Oscar movies in the theater.
Yeah, seeing a pretty bad movie is also important, which is what I'm finding out, because obviously you can't see 12 movies and they all be winners thus far.
To answer the question of, like, what draws me to theaters, one, obviously, that I think we all saw clearly is Dune. And it's those big event things, because I read the book and I went
phenomenal
into, like,
movie.
Nearly Holy a hell. Panic, realizing I hadn't bought the tickets in advance, like days in advance. And then I did it, and it was, like, almost sold out in, like, certain, like, prime movie times, days in advance. So people are still going, but it's those event movies are so few and far between right now that it's hard. I can see why there's a concern.
So Dennis sent out an article right before yesterday, whatever, and sort of prepped for this about a bunch of the theater owner bigwigs were getting together at this conference they're having, CinemaCon. And that article had a whole bunch of comments after it. And they were talking about what you have to do. And I just wanted to read a couple of the comments, because part of what you're talking about, right, is this thing that I don't know how you fix. It sounds like none of us have this experience at the theaters that we go to regularly. But this person writes, you know, I stopped going to a movie because other people in the audience wouldn't behave. They're using their phone. They're talking out loud. They're kicking seats. They're generally rude or obnoxious. Why would anybody spend that money? So I just gave up. Right now, I don't have that.
That was my initial reaction when we did theaters versus streaming, Katie. Like you mentioned earlier, what my issues was that I just was tired of people misbehaving. And I like to be able to, like, be immersed in the situation. It's thankfully I've been very lucky in a lot of these screenings where it hasn't been like that. But I totally see that being a problem.
Right. Yeah. I agree. And so then it's the question of, if that's your local theater experience or the closest theater you have, maybe it behooves theater owners to just figure out how to solve some of that stuff about the fact that that's the negative of being with a crowd of people that you can't control.
Right.
The other one further down was he just said, if I have to watch another Geico ad, then I should be able to see the movie for free, because that's the conversation in streaming and other stuff, is if you have to watch ads, it's free, you know, or $1.50, or I forget what. Yeah. It's $2.99 to not have ads on Amazon. So theoretically, I could get my $2.99 back if I would watch ads. So the point is that those two things are also factors, right? Which is they're putting a ridiculous amount of ads in there, and the theaters don't spend any effort trying to control the audience. Once you get into the theater, you don't see an employee. You don't see, you know, people could have a full-on fist fight and nobody would get called, or they only have, like, three people working, you know, you couldn't find a person in the theater if you did. And I just don't know if those are parts of the things that manifest themselves in the cost being a problem, you know, that going on, but also the movie has to be an event for you to decide that you're going to deal with all that shit.
Yeah. 30 minutes. I mean, some of them are trailers, which are fun, but again, there used to be a time, Chris, you know, it's like there used to be a time where trailers were premiered in front of movies, and that was a big event. You wanted to, I mean, I don't know if you remember when Star Wars first trailer came out, people bought tickets, watched the trailer, and then left the theater with no interest. So there was a time when that was part of it. Now it's also because of the marketing machine. They're also released on YouTube, like, the same time. So I watch a lot of my stuff on social and on YouTube. more than I do in the theater. You know, occasionally now if I go, I'll be like, oh yeah, this is like for that movie. I've already seen the trailer for it. And I just sit back and watch it.
This is a problem that I think combines these two things. I have not spoken on the podcast about this, but you guys know I need to like lock in for my focus to like really right. be good, especially with a movie.
Oh, we've
you know?
Talked about the need for coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, so yeah. like I have a focus issue, you know, so especially at the beginning of a movie, I'm like, I can't miss the beginning or like a little bit of the first act because I need to understand the story.
Right.
But so many people now like purposely arrive late because there are so many ads yeah. or they don't want to watch the trailers that I feel like right when the movie starts, like at least five people come like filter in and try and get past you and stuff like that. I can't stand it. I cannot.
Yeah. No. It's,
stand it. I feel like they should
rude.
Just, like they do in musicals or plays, they should close the doors.
Lock the doors.
Sorry.
You can't come
you
in.
You are 5 minutes late to see the beekeeper yeah. go away.
Go away. You
know. Just go away. No, I mean, we talked about.
You get to keep, you at the, as the theater owner, you get to keep the money.
Yeah.
And you can sell their seat for like reduced price. So there's a lot of people out there yes. waiting to see how many people don't come, like the Sundance model.
Right. Where no, no, I don't know. No, about, no. I don't know if we should do the
I'm
Sundance model.
I'm
going to
take everybody's
anymore.
Money, even list. If you don't get to see the movie.
Yeah,
that's a very
no,
just,
let's
nice
not encourage
model. That'll keep it going in the theaters. Best. That's for sure. But yeah. yeah, I mean, we talked about it before too. Like it, because of the 30 minutes beforehand or whatever. Like you know, you got a 2.5 hour movie. You got 30 minutes. Now it's a, all of a sudden you're like 3 hours. You got to sit there.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
That that has to be like a trend that just happened this year. I feel like that I can't accept that we are now going to have 3.5 hour movies from here forward.
I mean, you know, and so this is also really fun. The other day I was watching, yes, a Blu-ray. Okay, I got a lot behind me, but I was watching a movie, and of course, a lot of these discs have like burned in trailers and stuff in them. So mm-hmm. some of it's fun because it's like a time capsule. But what I thought was really funny is I was watching a Blu-ray and there was an ad for Blu-ray on it. It was like Blu-ray, the future of, and I was like, I'm watching the, what I know, I have it. And I started laughing because I realized it's like the AMC, you're like sitting in AMC and they're like, you should come to AMC. It's like, bitch, I'm here. I'm here
yeah,
right
yeah.
now.
yeah.
Like, why are you? Why
like,
are you doing
I,
this?
You know, there's a new Nicole Kidman ad in the AMC.
The one
oh,
I saw,
in it already?
They just took out my favorite line, which is
oh,
"Heartbreak
you think,
feels
you
good
think
in a place
a,
like this."
You think that's a just a cut down?
Yeah. Then they because there's different lines now, and they took out the "Heartbreak feels good in a place like this," which was so. Delightfully ridiculous.
Yeah, it's good that line, but the other one's not good either. But anyway,
no.
But the point I was going to make is during Godzilla Con, I'm sitting next to my wife, and I thought maybe because it was a new month, you know, became April. Oh, maybe we'll not see Nicole Kidman at the middle beginning of this movie, and I'd be okay with that, right? You know, like I feel like the government should put a quota on how many times in this in your experience of something. So like. I like Jennifer Garner and Charles Barkley and Sam Jackson and Spike Lee, but I could happily have seen a lot less Capital One ads than I saw watching basketball, and I wouldn't forget the Capital One's out there, but
right.
by the 37th time, you're like, dude, there must be an algorithm that knows
oh,
that this TV has seen this fucking ad so many times that now I hate it. And so I said to her, I said, okay, maybe they've decided we had the Nicole Kidman thing. That movie's on. We're sitting there. Nope. The new one comes up and just like, oh my God. And I turn to Jenna and I say to myself, to her, I say, what would have been genius if it starts like you remember and she steps in the puddle and she gets in. And then once you cut to her in the theater, she just turned and says, thanks for coming out to AMC. Bye.
yeah.
Like just,
let the really
I don't need to talk
off.
To you anymore.
Yeah.
We just want you to know we appreciate you coming out here. Like,
what if she walked into a theater and was like, so this place, and you just heard somebody in the back of the theater just yell, start it already. And she's like, okay.
Yeah,
and it just started. And you're like, ah, finally someone's speaking for me. They showed it twice when I went to see a movie recently. They must have looped it or something, so literally it came back on and everyone was like, what the you see the heel hit the puddle again, you're like, wait a minute,
yeah
oh no
yeah.
it's back. And then it did go the second time, and then someone did go three times, and then they didn't do it. And we were actually sad.
That's amazing.
At that point, we're all in there. We had no idea. We're stuck, you know? What are you going to do, leave at that point? But it is, but again, you're right, Chris. Like, there is an interesting concept that, like, literally you can get things for free now if you're by watching ads, or cheaper or whatever. So the fact that you watch 30 minutes of ads and a lot of it is AMC or Pepsi or products or things like that, or essentially, again, other movies that they plan on you coming to AMC to watch. So really it is promotion for future, you know, audience. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting that it doesn't go down a nickel for that. If anything, it's gone up in price.
Up, yeah.
Well, and that's the thing I find interesting, and I will say this, being this curmudgeonly dude on this podcast, is that the other thing that's really weird about it is there's this weird sense that everyone in America should feel scared that theaters are going to go out of business. Like, if you go out of business, because no, actually, everybody in America decided there was a better way to watch movies, right? Like, so you should figure it out, and it should be you kissing my ass, not telling me I have to buy a shitload of fucking stuff and watch ads and pay $19 for the same fucking movie I could have seen 2 years ago for $10. Like they just keep thinking we're all going to accept all this bullshit because movies are, you know, they got to be there. They got to do, you're mm-hmm. like, no, this is a capitalist society. I love theaters. We have talked about it. All three of us like going to theaters. I want them to work. But what I want them to do is not become some charity that I'm going to overpay for because I just feel like they should exist. And that isn't going to be a business model that survives, is no. people feeling sorry for the theater.
I mean,
well,
you know,
maybe yeah. this is a good segue to actually asking the question that we meant to discuss here in this episode.
30
which
minutes
is,
in.
Yeah. What... what movie wise do we think is working in theaters, or what could work?
Right.
Because I thought one of the articles that we talked about for this episode that was interesting was what Judd Apatow recently said in an interview, which is Hollywood will chase anything that does well. And I really liked this because he was kind of like, It's like not quite optimistic, but I think it is a good point that he started this by saying, like, he assumes the market will swing back toward comedy films. And I think it's interesting that, like, it just seems like something that the industry often forgets is that there is a pendulum that swings, you know? And we've kind of talked about it on several episodes of the podcast, but I think the difficult part is we don't know which way it's going to swing, you know? So that's what freaks yeah. everyone out. But it does swing, you know? So it's, we were in a big superhero moment. We could go back to another superhero moment, but it could also swing toward comedy. It seems like yeah. it's swinging a little bit toward romantic
well.
Comedy. Yeah.
You know?
So what do we think?
We talked about the idea of how comedy and horror are very similar in the sense that it's a collective energy in the moment,
yeah.
right? So you have that moment where everybody is scared at the same time, you know, like you're shouts or is frightened. You have that, you feel that energy, whether it's verbal or whatever, but it's the same with comedy. Obviously, when people are laughing, you're laughing along with them and you have these joyous moments.
Yeah.
You know, I had mentioned about IMAX and stuff like that, like making it a more of an event or showing it in a way that is very different than how you could even see. I mean, even with Oppenheimer, Barbie went to IMAX when it re-released.
Yeah.
Obviously Dune Part 2 is still selling out. So I think things like that are really popular as well.
Well, and I think with both of those genres, it's interesting because it's not like any romantic comedy or any horror movie is going to work in the theater necessarily. So
right.
like Anyone But You worked, but it was, I think, a kind of bigger spectacle kind of movie. Like there were big moments and, you know, helicopters, and then there was the star power of Glenn
right.
Powell and Sydney Sweeney. But then, you know, we read scripts for our production company, and like you read a script and you're like, this isn't quite as big. Like there is a difference in the kind of levels of horror or levels of rom-com where you want to see something like Anyone But You in the theater, because it was a big moment and you're like, wow, that really worked. We're all laughing.
Right.
But something that could be a little bit of a simpler like character story, but still a romantic comedy could work better on streaming.
I mean, that movie
still a spectacle.
Yeah, I mean, that movie definitely, two stars, strong chemistry. I will say it was a little, it was more raunchy than normal, which I think also tips the scale further away from being like Hallmarky. That's not a word, but you know what I mean?
Right,
like, because of that. And I think that a lot of that sort of helped as well. But, you know, we had Aline on, and, you know, Brosh McKenna, and she had mentioned that, you know, it's hard to get two stars like that in a movie. I mean, you know, her movie had had two big stars. But usually, and not to use Hallmark again or whatever, but, you know, there's like the hunky co-star guy that you don't know too much, that maybe has been in a few things, you know, where you like recognize his face from that thing. You know, oh yeah, wasn't that the guy who was the victim on Chicago Fire, that episode, or whatever the hell it is? And then there's like the well-known, you know, actress who's basically carrying that part of the movie. So I feel like that definitely helped with that movie. And in general, again, we just enjoyed watching it in theater with people around people. It's a good energy, you know?
Well, it is. You do see that with like the romantic comedies on streaming platforms versus the ones in theaters. So like even just to continue talking about Glenn Powell, Set It Up was Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell. But that was when no one knew who Glenn Powell was. At least I didn't. You know, he was in
Hidden Figures, and he's been in some things before. Yep,
but not in like a rom-com sense. But I feel like we did know who Zoe Deutsch was, so it was like they were lesser known stars, it really worked
names,
on streaming.
The bigger names in that one were the bosses,
the two bosses,
Lucy Liu, the other guy.
But then Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell, like Glenn Powell then did Maverick, and then it became bigger, and then it was like theater level.
But
stars.
I think but see, that's what I think. If you break it down and you actually were to break it down and say, okay, what makes a theater different, right? Like, so you want to feel like, and that's why romantic comedy may be behind, even though right now you have the example of what we would call sort of leader, but the thing is, where do you want to be with a group of other people? So like, I think of some of the movies that I loved in theater. So Wedding Crashers, or, you know, The Hangover, or, you know, the action movies we already talked about, or the monster movies or whatever, horror movies. I think you sort of enjoy the experience of experiencing it with a bunch of other people, right? My son was fortunate enough, had a friend whose grandfather is a very successful college coach, was invited to go watch the Final Four in Phoenix.
Ooh.
And he's in the theater, in the stadium, and he's got pretty good seats because he's part of this whole, you know, coach thing. And he's watching it, and halfway through the second game, because there's two games on Saturday, he texts me and says, I actually wish I'd watched this on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Because he said, it's not that it's not cool, and like, he had the Hall of Fame class, so like, he loves Vince Carter. Vince Carter was sitting right in front of him, which is annoying because he's like 6'9". But he liked being in the situation, but it didn't make the viewing of the game, because he didn't have a team or anybody that he was super rooting for, any better. And TV has done such a good job with live sports of close-ups and commentary and seeing shit you can't
stats
see from
and
your
everything
seat,
flowing
right?
up. Great stuff, yeah.
So he's texting me at the Final Four. Meanwhile, I'm at home laying on the couch watching the same game he's watching. And he's like, I really wish I was laying on the couch next to you. Now, as a dad, I was like, that's awesome. But the thing I was saying is, I think there's a lot of movies that fit into that category. I even would say a romantic comedy at some level is because if you think about dates and you say to yourself, I'm going to take a girl on a date, you know, or whatever you want to take on a date, and you are there, it's hard to talk to people. You're not getting to know each other. If you're going for a comedy, but it's a romantic comedy, you know there's going to be a certain amount of saccharine, even if it's, you know, the more raunchier. Comedies, however, I think, you do like to go laugh, right? So like, if my friends were like, hey, there's that new, you know, whatever, Adam Sandler comedy or whatever, you might say, you know what, that looks funny, I'm going to go do that. right? Now, I will say I didn't go see the new Ghostbusters, but that somehow didn't feel special to me. But I wonder if there's a way to tell the audience, thank you, Dennis, that, you know, when it's actually a better experience. Like, I had a great time in King Kong and Dune with an audience. People were making noise, not annoying noise. They were with it. They were cheering. They were gasping. They were doing whatever. King Kong, there's a full-out cheer when Godzilla shows up to help him.
Wow. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And if you, and my point is, that was more fun. It's also a massive screen. The effects are really good. So, I could have watched it at home. I'm not saying it would have been that different. I have a nice TV, whatever. But there was, and that's how I do it now. I think to myself, is it going to be a better experience because I don't have theaters near me where everyone's going to be super annoying? And I don't, you know, I am also an A-lister. I did it just to see what it was like back in the day when they had that movie club thing. What was it called? Were you?
Oh, yeah.
The one that went out of business, but I still think it's a good idea. But it's basically subscription in a theater. Right?
What
it's
was
a
that
different
called?
Business model. I think it was called Movie Pass.
Movie Pass. Wow. Yeah.
But my point is that I don't know how it used to be. And again, I know I'm a broken record about the industry used to tell people this is one that's special that you like better in theaters. And they were going to put it there. Right.
Right.
And I have that now much higher bar about what I want to see with other people. And that's why I asked you, Dennis, are there any other people in the audience? Because for me, actually, going and being alone in a theater, even though the screen's huge and the chair's there and they make better popcorn than I can ever seem to make at home, it's weird being in a theater.
It's super odd.
Five other people. You're like, wait, I came to have them go fucking crazy when Godzilla kills. Or hell, in that movie, when Mothra shows up. You're like, yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's kind of fun when no one else is in the theater. If you're
I stand up sometimes and start stretching. I don't know. I got things. You know, I
you
can
just
do whatever
like
I want.
Talk out
just
loud.
Do a couple laps, you know, get my exercise ring.
You probably didn't buy the ticket in the hopes that it was just you and your friend watching the movie, right?
Right.
No.
Well, I mean, it depends.
You know, I mean, horror movies are boring by yourself, though. I figure that out because you just sort of yell.
My worst nightmare. If I show up to a horror movie.
And you're like dead center seated and you just keep looking behind you.
I would leave. I would genuinely not.
I mean,
I would not be there.
But that's the thing. Horror movies doing really well. I mean, there are 36 horror movies slated to open in theaters this year. Right now. 36. That's big.
What the heck?
You know? But because obviously researching this and just talking about it and also just seeing horror movies and being a big horror fan, you know, Immaculate came out, the biggest opening weekend ever for a film released by Neon. $5.3 million debuted domestically, right? That's huge. I mean, it's a $10 million budget, so it made back half its money in the first weekend. Late Night with the Devil.
Where you actually think the people who financed it got all of those
$5 million. No, not at all.
Well, and Sydney Sweeney.
Sydney Sweeney's in it.
I would say that's a little bit along the lines of when we always talk about Red Dawn, the second one, about how, you know, they woke up and all of a sudden Thor was the lead of their movie, right? And they were like, fuck it, let's put it out.
Yeah.
Right?
But here's the thing, like, here's the tricky part, right? Like, so Last Night with the Devil, which was an IFC Films, not a huge star leading that. I mean, I love him, but he's more of a character actor in a lot of these things like Suicide Squad and stuff. But that was the largest opening weekend ever for when that came out for IFC Films. It was a $2.8 million debut domestically. But what's crazy about that movie was it was only playing in a little over 1,000 screens, which means it had a per screen average of $2,700 like per screen, which is insane for a $2 million budget movie. But what's funny is Last Night with the Devil and Immaculate opened to the same weekend. So these horror movies both broke records the same weekend. So again, I think horror is something that is definitely going to be, you know, carrying some weight at the theaters.
I mean, I would also say, again, representing old people, I would also say it's also a genre that a lot of the stuff that happens, kids looking at their phones, kids screaming at the TV, at the screen, you know, whatever, there aren't a lot of people who are going to write those comments and say, oh, I was upset. I went to see Immaculate and there were kids screaming at the screen. Like, they're not going to Immaculate no matter what.
Right. I hope not. They'll be screwed
and,
up for life.
And I think that's the, also the part of some of those, you know, the kids also, they have their phone on when the ads are playing in the movie theater. So they barely have any idea that somebody changed. They just assume there's ads in front of movies, you know? So I think horror also has that advantage, which is they have this younger movie-growing audience that is less, A, used to the way theaters used to be because they're too young to remember, and B, they're not actually bothered by that shit, right? Because they do it anyway. I mean, my kids do it at home. They're looking at three screens while they're watching something on the TV. I don't understand it, but they do it.
Yeah, that's so true. I feel like just myself, you know, getting older, I would see a horror movie in the theater quicker if I were like, you know, 20. You know, like I remember having a good time seeing Paranormal Activity in like college with my like big group of friends. And
or your emotional really maturity is about 20, like myself, and then I get to go, which is fine. Which makes total sense.
But if you're a fan of the genre, that makes sense. But I just feel like now as I'm just realizing, like when we watched Talk to Me, which was a great movie, but I watched it by myself because we were watching it for work, and I was like, I feel that was, I didn't have a very good time.
Yeah, I don't think
it was a good movie,
yet.
But I felt very scared. I don't think I have. So, yeah, okay. There are two more genres that I would like to talk about in terms of theaters, but first,
fire away.
Comedy. Let's get back to comedy because we do have the producer of American Pie here with us today and on all episodes.
Craig Harris.
So where was the pendulum, Chris, when American Pie came out in theaters?
Look, we are that movie and that series of theatrically released movies, the four that I worked on, I personally would say the heyday of movies and theaters, literally. And part of it was because it was one of the only things you can go do. Now, we also
1999, great year.
It is 1999. We went back.
Stay tuned for our 1999 episode.
To an R-rated comedy.
Oh, yeah.
And that made us stand out a little bit. Now, lots of people throw out R-rated comedies. But the point, what I would say is that there was literally no conversation like the ones we're having right now. How do we get people into the theater? How are people doing? You know, the hardest thing they were trying to do was make sure that we weren't so teenage focused and, you know, prepubescent boy that no one in their right mind other than the 14 to 16 year old boy would go see the movie, right? And, you know, that's what they always say is somehow we appeal to women too, that made them and parents would let their kids go see it. And I think part of that's Eugene Levy. Part of it was people really laughed at the movies. I think Paul and Chris did a great job in the first one and that it continued on. But I think the point was that's before the pandemic. That's before the internet. That's before, you know, any sort of anything. It literally was everybody saw a movie. Anyone who ever watched a movie, whether, you know, however, on DVD or on TV or HBO or whatever, was still going to theaters. There are whole groups of people today who just aren't going to theaters, period, right?
Yeah.
And I always ask that, what would happen with that movie? I mean, we've talked about it in one of our other podcasts about where would Good Will Hunting get made today, right? I think to some extent, you never know what would happen with something like American Pie, right? Okay. Which is partly why we haven't made the fifth one, because nobody knows where all the kids are right now. Like, should it be just a series of TikTok episodes? You know, like, what would it be? But I think that's...
It's a web series for Disney Plus.
The audience was so predictable, and you could trust them that if you made a funny movie, right, that people started telling each other they liked it, and we were right, you know, 99, there aren't smartphones yet, but people start telling each other, that movie was really funny. We're going to do fine. And we did really well. But
it did like kind of start a wave of like teen comedies.
100%.
Yeah.
But that's back to Judd Apatow's thing.
Yeah.
Right? Where people copy it. I want to read, and I actually think we did this. I had not read this quote before we made those movies, but there's a big director from years ago named George Stevens. And I've talked about it, but I found the quote finally so I can actually do it justice. But it's just a wonderfully worded, in my opinion, summary of Hollywood and this idea of predictability, which is what Wall Street needs, right? And entertainment, which to some extent gets boring if it's predictable, right? Like it's not. So he said, so the game is to promise them what they expect and then give them something they wish they had thought of.
Ooh.
Oh, that's
and
great.
I think it's a great quote because American Pie is like, there's a million things, a million executives, smart executives, people working at these places. Animal House have been successful, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, all these movies. And they somehow went away from it thinking there were real reasons that would last forever of why an R-rated comedy wouldn't work, particularly an R-rated teen comedy, right? We went in and said, well, we're just going to give you a teen comedy that'll be pretty good, but hey, we really like to try this R-rated, right? And I think that that's part of that quote. I think Kong versus, or what Legendary has been doing with the monster universe, they call it now, or whatever, but this idea that Godzilla's been around fucking forever. King Kong's like one of the oldest, you know, monster things. They got together like, well, it has enough of what the audience expects, but if we do something different like this, right, it might carry over, right? Dune, as you said, you've read all the books, right? Part of it is, and we have that question here too about, is it the IP? I'm not sure enough people read the books. I'm not sure enough people knew about Kong. We've talked about how much about Barbie as a toy is not a piece of IP that initially in your mind you go, I'm seeing that movie, right? Like, it's not. But the point is, what I'd say is that there is this thing that I think Hollywood right now, because of Wall Street, because of shareholders, because of, you know, debt and dumb money reasons, isn't living by that motto. They're trying too much to repeat themselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I love that quote. I feel like even that should just be a rule for like making movies in general. So like if you are a writer, director, you know, I remember that, not to bring up Glenn Powell again, but I remember that in Hitman. Remember, Dennis, when we saw that at Sundance and we talked about it after, like, I feel like every scene is something that felt predictable, but then it ended in a way where you were like, oh God, I didn't think it was going to go there. And that made it way better, weirdly.
Yeah. So absolutely. I mean, that's definitely, I mean, it's certainly, you should definitely want to have people walk out. I mean, that literally people walking out of the theater and saying, well, that was much better than I thought it was going to be is literally because of that quote. It's because you went in there with a baseline. I will also say this is where I think where perhaps trailers and stuff, you know, we've all seen a trailer where you're like, that was the entire movie. Like, I don't need to see that.
Yeah.
So then with that preconceived knowledge in your head, right, that knowledge you have, then you go into the movie.
Yeah.
You already kind of expect everything, so the odds are really low that they're going to, like, you're going to walk away with it. You know, you're going to walk away and be like, well, I didn't expect that to be about that or that to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, The Departed was a famous one where there's, like, a famous death in it that you did not see coming, so you don't understand. And then you're shocked.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is you just expect it to be the same thing. You know, I mean, Chris, I don't know, weird to bring up Project Greenlight season 3, but when we did Feast, there was a very, very big push to try to break down every basic horror trope where people thought you knew where it was going to get. You know, like, oh, the character is going to sneak out to get to the car to drive it back. And you're like, all right, in every horror movie, they sneak out to the car and they get killed, or before they get there, or they get the car and they come back and something. Like, in Feast, the person gets to the car and then just drives away and leaves everyone there.
Leaves them all. Like, I love that moment. I mean, and I think I would argue the reason the Anyone But You also crossed was that genre has a very clear thing. And even though I have not seen it, so I can't speak to it,
but
I guess the ending, they end up together.
You should watch it tonight.
But I can't. Yeah, I'll definitely be doing that. I can promise you that's going to happen tonight.
Man, I could feel the sarcasm
was that
all
a real
the way
promise?
Over here. Yeah. Wow. Even over
well,
remote,
that's sarcastic
that sarcasm
as hell. But my point is, they did something which literally fit that quote.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that there's this attempt. We're trying to give them something they'd expect, but then give them something they never thought of, right, is a great way to describe where we are right now. It could also be for theater owners, right? You got to give me what I love about the theater, but then give me something I don't expect, right? And I think that's hard to do, and they're trying to figure it out, but it might just be as simple as we find a new way to explain to people when it's just a way better experience with other people, right?
I would like to transition now into action, the action genre, because that has historically been one that does well in theaters and is good experienced with other people, I think people would argue.
Yep.
But the recent one, Roadhouse, which had a whole, you know, like the director was all upset that it wasn't going to be released in theaters and things like that, was just on Amazon. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on Roadhouse? Should it have been in the theaters?
No.
Dennis?
It shouldn't have been made. Listen, I'm a huge fan of the original, so that I'm probably a little jaded there, but like, it felt very, I don't want to use the word, maybe I'll try to be nice. It felt soulless and terrible. The truth of it was, is that like a lot of what made the original story, and again, you could easily have just made a Jake Gyllenhaal bouncer movie who's a UFC, like you could have just made, but the fact that you called it Roadhouse, you have Easter, it's very clear that it was a remake of the original.
Uh-huh.
And when you do that, you automatically pit them up against each other, right? There's some specific things, and they took a lot of the things. It's like they had a meeting at Amazon, and they were like, hey, let's list all the things you loved about the original, and let's make sure we don't do that this time. So, like, well, Chris, it was the opposite of what you had mentioned as a quote.
I just want to say, I can guarantee you, speaking for my fellow producers and writers and directors and actors, nobody has the meaning of saying, this is what they want. Let's not give it to
I you. Know,
okay.
Chris,
well,
but that's
I
how
actually,
felt. Felt.
I was having this conversation with my friend yesterday, and I haven't seen the first one. So I had a great time.
How dare you too? What is going on in this podcast?
I thought it was pretty good. I don't know if I would say it should have been released in the theaters necessarily. Like I thought it was fun just watching it at home. And it wasn't like that big of a spectacle where I thought it needed to be in the theater. But I was talking to my friend about who had seen the original about the story. Somehow I did get confused about the plot. So there was,
yes.
It didn't really matter, but there were some plot holes.
Oh, wait. I just saw another line came up. The AI must be searching on my Google from that quote. The third line is, and the plot should confuse everybody.
Yeah,
yes,
right?
that's what it is.
That
yes.
is not a good movie, Katie, when
I
you're
know.
Confused
no,
a plot that is solved by kickboxing.
You see, I know this. I had a good time. I'm not saying it was a quality movie. But what I am saying is I feel like someone adapting an old cult classic to a modern movie who's trying to make it unique and different, but also adapting a cult classic, I think can get kind of confused along the way, maybe in terms of plot, but in terms of like what to preserve from the first one and how to translate
that.
Well,
so I'm gonna, since I know nobody who worked on it, so I have no connection to this movie. I am with Dennis. I love the first one, and Katie, I recommend you go watch the first one.
Okay.
What I would say is all these people who are worried about what happens if AI starts actually creatively making movies, this Roadhouse is the example. this Roadhouse
so
is
true.
It's a computer who they bought MGM, Amazon. They, I'm sure there's two people looking at the what's inside the MGM library. Hey, Roadhouse was kind of cool. If we could get a young hip star now, oh, UFC is successful. Let's get UFC in there, and he's a UFC fighter. And we'll even get this guy, Conor McGregor, who's kind of famous, to be in the movie, right? We'll have these action sequences. We'll have this stuff. Well, what was good? What did people really like about the original Roadhouse? Well, I'm a computer program. I don't have any fucking idea what they liked about the original one. What I know works today is fights and boat crashes and hot girls and whatever.
Explosions and all
those. Let's blow some shit up. Let's have a fight. And at the end, the bar's saved. Right? And so then
that's actually the whole plot. Congratulations. You didn't even know.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I am a genius at this. Did you know that I'm Oscar nominated? Are you aware of that?
You're also Webby nominated. So let's just,
Webby nominated.
You're
a genius. God damn it. Woo! I'm actually Emmy nominated too, so I might have that. What's that thing of the?
Are you trying to get an Emmy? We got to get you a Tony.
I'm never gonna get a Tony, but maybe.
hey,
we could spell it a different way with like it's
with
Wego.
Webby,
Emmy, Grammy, and Oscar. So the only one I don't have is the Grammy. But anyway,
I think we could get a Tony.
Not to keep talking about myself, but my point is when I look at that, that's how it looks. It's a computer company. Saw this on their list, said yes, hired a writer just to get it done, put it together, paid Jake Gyllenhaal a lot of money, hired a director you've heard of, Doug Liman, right?
Yep.
But then what the great part is, and this is where I give them credit, at some point humans entered the conversation, and again, this is all hypothetical. I have no AI was not involved with this. They went out to make a movie. But the point is, then a human watched the movie and was like, there's no fucking way I'm buying a TV ad for this movie, right? This movie is not good. Like, so whatever the algorithm told us this would definitely be a success, that human bit, whatever the fuck it is, and I think part of what you were talking about, Katie, which is what was the stuff that was people were nostalgic about, right? Didn't come through, right?
Yeah.
Nope.
What was the stuff that was modern today in a situation like that? Didn't come through.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, but it clearly worked because it premiered on Prime at number one, the new Roadhouse, but at number five was the old Roadhouse. So it was very clear that people either watched that movie, they were like me, this is exactly what I did. I watched it, I slapped my forehead, and then once the headache went away from having watched that one, I watched the original instead. I mean, that's like, you know, not instead of, but literally right afterwards. And then recommended it on our curation post on social, the old one, because I felt so much like you just got to see the old one to really feel it. But yeah,
but
I mean,
I
guess it worked.
That,
I don't know.
That's the example of what the shareholders and companies, they think there are these formulas, right? Like you can go get the powdered milkshake machine, put it in your McDonald's, and people will buy a bunch of fucking milkshakes, right? And even in McDonald's, some of the shit they try doesn't work.
But that, you know what's funny though? The Roadhouse thing is the bigger thing that we had talked about, right? Relying on like existing IP. We know over the summer they had some problems in summer 2023, right? Like Indiana Jones, Mission Impossible, Transformers, Meg 2, the Flash. A lot of movies that they just leaned on being like, oh, well, everybody already knows it. It's established IP, similar to like Roadhouse. People are going to love it. I'm sure Roadhouse, the new Roadhouse, did well for Amazon on streaming. That's fine.
Yeah.
We don't have the numbers, but like...
But I'm sure they didn't make
it to do
that. I'm
sure it's the highest premiere ever they'll put on social, or they did put on social, but...
And I think it's valid that Doug Liman, like, wanted it in the theater. You could tell when you watch it that it was, like, stylized in a way where, like... He wanted it to be a spectacle, you know?
Yeah,
so there was
certain
sequences.
He's fucking good. That guy's pretty good.
It was
good. Like,
so
I'm sure he wasn't sitting there going, people are going to premiere this on their fucking TVs at home.
And Amazon is like the only streaming platform that has a history of putting things in theaters as well, like Manchester by the Sea, you
but
know?
That,
so,
but that's their, they reserve the right to see the movie.
Right.
And so the question is, now it's counterintuitive as a business where you spend a lot of money, you make a product, and then you're going to be like, well, we fucked that up. It didn't work, right?
Yeah.
Like, nobody's going to do that because maybe someone likes it or like you kid, your expectations were low. You had a good time in your house. So you're not going to cancel Amazon Prime because they made Roadhouse, right?
Yeah.
So that works out. That works out fine for everybody, right?
Yeah.
Had they spent $40 million marketing it, then somebody might have to be walking in the head guy's office being like, sorry, I lost you have $40 million. We really sort of knew the movie sucked, but we didn't know what to do with it. Right. And that's where I think the business is actually heading to a real positive thing with theaters, which is if this continues, the dialogue with the audience will start to get much clearer. You know, you see Sony do it now. Sony has this relationship with Netflix. If mysteriously you see an article that says, oh, Sony sells X to Netflix, that's not because they were psyched to sell. It's that the deal to premiere on Netflix was enough to get close to getting their money back than them not having to put it in theaters. Right.
It's a risk versus reward thing.
If they spend the money to put it in theaters, that means they think it could work. Now, I would argue Madam Web is a whole other thing because that's their big franchise and they need Spider-Man to be good and they're trying to expand it. And I think it's pretty much industry accepted out or universally accepted that was not a good expansion of it.
Now,
but Marvel has shit nobody likes. People have stuff nobody liked. It's not a... You don't have to be
perfect
every time.
These aren't guarantees nowadays.
I just bet Sony at the end of the day, and no one will ever tell us, it wishes they could have been free to say, well, this movie didn't work and let's just premiere it on Netflix or let's premiere it on whoever pays us the most money to premiere it, right?
Yeah. I mean, and when there's finally a movie, they could have WB discovered by by getting a tax write-off. They missed the opportunity, put it in theaters instead.
But I think they realize that that's too far. Like to be the
well,
head guy
somebody
just
does,
say,
I guess.
This movie is so fucking bad that we're not even going to put it in theaters or I mean put it out on streaming, that is saying
right
now the reason Zasloff could do it was he didn't green light it, right? He can blame the other guy who got who got fired and just be like, well, that guy was an idiot, that's why
that,
he got fired,
was,
so I'm not going to spend more money on this thing that
Kelly
guy was an idiot.
Acme's gone, just get rid of it, yeah, because he didn't green light it, so he just says like cleaning slate or saving money or however, but it is a weird vibe.
I kind of like that AI analogy for Roadhouse. It really does feel like somebody was just like, okay, computer.
No, I actually like
what
I didn't
these,
I know
what of these what
I'm
of these
you.
Movies that we own should we remake and what should we add to it that would help us make it a hit.
Well, I didn't want to like really emphasize this at the time because it is probably very offensive to the actual writers of the movie, but it really did feel like if you typed into ChatGPT like update Roadhouse for me, you know,
that's how Ghostbusters felt too. By the way,
yeah,
and, like, all the cameos, like I mean, I'm talking from Slimer all the way over. Just felt like they just tried to find a way to wedge people in so they can like have that nostalgic moment.
Watch it come out in the trades like in a month. Like turns out Roadhouse and
that
Ghostbusters
will never happen.
Never.
We just had a 6-month strike about how is not allowed.
Which is why.
So that'll be the next thriller, which is why did those 4 screenwriters get killed? And they were going to tell people that ChatGPT wrote
this is
Madam
the fourth
Web
time in a row a car went off Mulholland Drive. Who would have thought?
Exactly.
I feel like a studio though could be like, yeah, we're going to do a rewrite and then you know send it into ChatGPT and then the screenwriters are like.
I would say I doubt the studio's done it because they are signatories to the union and because they got to be very careful. I can tell you who definitely has done it is other producers. People who own
not
Spoiler.
Us at Fusion Studios.
Not at Fusion Studios.
No.
We love the writer and the writer director.
Yeah. We don't use artificial intelligence.
But
we don't use intelligence.
And I think we since we've mentioned
only the writers.
Glenn Powell 45 times, the one that in my opinion could have totally fit into this category, but didn't. Because I think there are real humans working on it, and I think they actually love it, and was Maverick. Top Gun Maverick is a perfect example of one you could have thrown into the ChatGPT and said, go take care of it. But you watch Top Gun Maverick, and they hit all the right buttons.
Yeah,
yes.
And they did it in the right way. That was the key thing, is they did it in the right way. It didn't feel wedged in to like right. pull on those heartstrings for nostalgia. It was like very, right. very
specific. It's a perfect film, as I've said many times on this podcast.
Yes, yes. It's the 1999 of sequels.
Yes.
Is what I put it out there for you.
I also just wanted to point out that there are additional experiences that nobody could predict, similar to the quote that I shared.
Yep.
And the biggest one is Rocky Horror Picture Show. So I don't think we cannot do a theater episode and right. not just say all those people dressing up, all those people coming out and singing along, bringing the water guns, doing the other stuff. That's a whole other side of it where it just becomes an experience in and of itself. You don't say to somebody, you should see the movie Rocky Horror Picture Show, right? Because you can do that at home. You can do whatever. What right. you always say to your friend is, if you've never done it, you should go to one of the theaters that does yeah. the midnight show.
And experience
show
it.
And yeah. experience it, right? And that is also, I think, what happened with Taylor Swift's movie version was people are singing along, people are having fun, people are dancing in the aisles. So you didn't quite get all the way to her doing it live, but you got to have some of that experience. And for a few people, my understanding is she showed up in some theaters too. So, you know, that is all part of that. Yes, we can make events and things, but you can't have some open 52 weeks a year expecting events every
yeah, yeah.
weekend. So to keep them, just remember, it's also fun to sit in a dark room and be scared. Or in my opinion, the reason I agree with Judd Apatow is that comedy will come back because it's fucking fun to laugh out loud with a bunch of other people in a theater.
Absolutely.
It just is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe we should at Fusion Studios prioritize trying to find the next Rocky Horror Picture Show musical type event thing. And then we can translate that to the stage, and then that's how Chris can win a Tony.
And then,
oh,
and
wow,
then
Chris there gets we go. Got,
I got I it all planned
you,
out.
I thought you were going to say, let's do Manchester by the Sea, the musical.
Nope.
Oh, my God.
No, that is not going to pan out. Holy.
Dennis, no.
That's a hard pass. That is wow.
I'm just going to want to say one summary thing, which is, if you're listening to this and you're thinking about watching a movie, just give a theater a try again and
yeah.
think about why you go.
Yeah.
Because I had a great time in theaters. And if you're not expecting it to be Disneyland, it still delivers on a great experience, assuming you don't have a bunch of assholes on their phone screaming at the top of their lungs.
Think about why you go, because that could be what saves the theaters.
Exactly.
Yes, let's all save the theaters.
Save the theaters.
Save the hashtag save the theaters for sure.
Or at least some of them.
Yeah, some of them don't. Yeah. Yeah, whatever. No.
Well, I don't know that we need 6,000 theater screens out there.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. As always, check out our socials, OMH Pod, and follow the podcast to tune in every Thursday for a new episode. Go check out something in the theater, will you?
Go theaters.
Go theaters.
Go theaters.